Welcome back to the program. Our exploration of what's so continues. And I'd like to begin this session with a look at the first question on your homework assignment last night. In what way, if at all, would your life change if the following statement was true? Nobody owes me anything. Now, maybe your life wouldn't change in any way if that statement were true. Maybe, in fact, that statement is true for you. How many of you actually looked at that question? Gee, if that were my truth, how would my life be different? If you did, tell me what your answer is. What answer did you come up with? Who had an answer to that? Raise your hand. Good. Okay, so if the following statement were true, nobody owes me anything, my life would change in the following way.
I lose all of my victimhood.
I would lose all of my victimhood. Wow. So you can't be a victim if nobody owes you anything. It immediately frees you of victimhood. Of course, some of us don't want to be freed of victimhood. Some of us find great solace, great comfort, great strength in being a victim. In fact, some people have made victimhood their whole lives, and their role as the victim of society or of someone in society is what has driven the engine of their entire experience. You don't understand. I am the victim. And out of their victimhood, they have created whole lives. We all know people or have heard of people like this. But what would your life be like if you were no longer a victim?
We were in Estes Park between Christmas and New Year's, so I answered this question once before.
I should explain to our listening audience that Estes Park is another place where I've held this retreat. And you were at one of these retreats before.
Yes.
All right.
And after that retreat, on New Year's Eve, I had declared that I would not compromise my integrity. And this is my husband next to me who declared transparency. And we went into 3 or 4 months of everything unlike it coming into our space.
I understand, and I congratulate you on your courage. I see that you're still sitting together.
Yes. We are still sitting together and in some very good space. But in that 4 months, I had to become willing for him to leave the room. And I won't speak for what he had to become willing for, but I did have to speak my truth as I saw it at the time about myself and about him who is my other, knowing full well that could lead us to separation. That was a terribly scary thing after 34 years of marriage. I had no idea that that's what I went to Estes Park about. What we feared might bring separation actually brought us to the discovery that we needed to take a very sacred space before we began our day, every day in the outside world, to have a safe place to speak all of our truth, no matter how it was going to sound to each other. All of it. I was going to say no fear, but there is a lot of times fear involved for me. And that space has become so sacred to us that it is like eating the 3 meals we eat every day that we wouldn't consider skipping because we are not nourished for the day without it.
Thank you.
So that's our experience.
Thank you very much. Like this nice lady, when she came to Estes Park, all of you came here for a particular reason and purpose, and you may not know what that is. But you will know when you leave. You will know when you leave why you came here. And you will have a big aha. And that aha may have already come to some of you. Somebody said to me last night, the be do have thing was it. That's it. That's what I came for. It's over for me now. Now I'm just going to just audit the rest of the course. So, at some point, you will have your personal, aha, I see. That's why I came here. And right now you don't know what that is, but you all came here. You brought yourself here for a particular reason, and you will know what it is when you leave. If no one owes you anything, you can't be a victim of anyone. And I presume from what you did not say in your sharing with us, that at some point you felt that your husband owed you some stuff. She's nodding her head, yes. And I presume that what you got clear about is that he doesn't owe you anything. And that, of course, was very scary, because it looked like if he didn't owe it to you to stay there, then why would he stay there? And why would he continue behaving in a certain way? Because all this while you thought he was doing at least certain things because he owed it to you to do those things. See, what would happen if a person didn't owe you anything? Nancy and I have a little ritual that we perform every morning of our life. I give her my ring and she gives me hers, and we marry each other every day. I give her my ring and she puts it on my finger again and she says, "I choose you again this day. I choose you again this day." And that makes the relationship very clear. It makes it very clear to each of us that we are in that moment agreeing again to a certain way of relating to each other. That has nothing to do with any other promises kept or made. Book 3 makes an astonishing assertion. This one is going to really raise some questions. In Book 3 it says, promises are lies. You cannot truly promise anyone anything until you become truly, fully, completely creative beings. By that I mean someone at the level of a Buddha or a Christ or a Hare Krishna. And there are those kind of realized beings. And for those kind of realized beings, a promise is not a lie. A promise can be made. But for those of us who are below the level of the Buddha, the book says it is impossible to really make a promise. Because a promise is a statement of how things are going to be in the future. And it is a giving away of your very power of creation. It says, "I know today how it's going to be for me tomorrow." Now that's all well and good until tomorrow comes and it's not that way with you anymore. Then you're confronted with the problem of your promise. One day I'll write a book called The Problem of Your Promise. And the problem is that you feel one way and you said you would feel another. And so now the question becomes, do you remain truthful to yourself or to your promise? And that's how we've begun to learn to lie to ourselves. Because we have an idea that we must keep our promise. We said we would, we said we would, we said we would. And we said we wouldn't, we said we wouldn't, we said we wouldn't. And because I said I wouldn't, then I can't. Even though now I want to. Boy, do I want to. But I said I wouldn't, so I can't. Or I can't because I said I would. I said I would do this, so I can't do that. Even though now I want to. And so we begin the slow erosion of our own truth. And pretty soon we've got ourselves convinced that in fact we haven't given up anything. Now the only person who can really make a promise and keep it is a person who has risen to such a level of creation that he can speak his intention today for a year, 50 years down the line, and know that his ability to create it that way will not be compromised by any other person, place, or thing. And some of us can do that, or think that we can. And so we do our best to keep our promises. But how many of you in your life have faced the deep inner pain, and it's somewhere between your stomach and your chest? It's a deep inner pain. How many of you have faced that deep inner pain of realizing that a promise you made cannot be kept honestly? I don't make the promises I used to make. I've learned to make fewer promises. I've learned to make only the promises that I know that I can keep, And by golly, even some of those I find out 5 years later I can't keep. But at least then I have the courage to go to that person and say, I can't keep this promise to you and live in integrity. I can't keep this promise to you. Can we renegotiate that? Can we talk about it again? Can we look at it one more time another way? Is there any way we can live with this new truth of mine? So there's a whole startling section in Book 3 about this, and you might find it interesting to explore that. What I suggest that you do then with the important promises of your life, if you insist on making them, is to remake them every day. Just make a list of the 10 most important promises I've got hanging out there, you know, where my chit is on the table. What are the 10 most important commitments in my life right now? Just do this as a private work. As a matter of fact, let's just do this. Good exercise. Here's what I'd like you to do. Just have some fun with me and do the work. Make a mental or paper and pencil list of the 5 most important promises I have out there right now. The 5 most important commitments that I'm consciously aware I've made to another person or company or religion or God or whatever. These are my 5 most important personal commitments. Do that. Good. Now, beneath that on the paper, or in a column next to it, depending on how you've devised your paper, take a look at each of those 5 commitments and numbering these following responses, 1 through 5, write down what, if anything, could cause me to break that commitment. Be honest with yourself, you're not going to share this with anyone. If someone is looking over your shoulder, tell them to cut it out. Now that you've finished the second list, I'd like you to make a third, please, if you'd entertain me on this. I'd like you to make a list of 3 to 5 important commitments you have made in the past and broken. I'd like you to make a list of 3 to 5 important commitments you've made in the past and broken. Of course, if you've never broken a single commitment in your entire life, you will have nothing on your piece of paper at this point. Make a list of the important commitments you've made and broken. If you've never broken a single important commitment in your entire life, look to see why. Something that you said was going to be true for you that turned out not to be, and you changed your mind or had a different feeling about it and so had to retreat from that agreement, from that commitment, from that promise. Boy, I can think of 30 of these in my life. On the other hand, I'm kind of a unsavory character. Good. Now, the last list, please, the last list. I'd like you, please, this is honesty time. No one is going to see this. This is just between you and the paper. Make a list of any commitment or commitments, any promise or promises, any agreement or agreements that you have made and kept that you wish you hadn't or didn't have to. Good, thank you. Thank you for looking at this. Now, I'm just curious, what, if anything, did you find interesting about this?
I discovered that all the commitments I made, none of them were to me, for me, myself. Am I glad I kept everyone? Yes.
What do you mean that none of them were for you?
I mean, none of them were for my own personal benefit that I can think. And maybe they were. I don't know. But well, most of them were for someone else's or some other cause or some other benefit.
Yeah. This is the great illusion in which the human race engages. The lie in the space, the implicit untruth in that statement, and I don't mean lie in the sense of a deliberate falsehood, but I mean the lie in the sense of simply an untruth, in that statement is, we did it for someone else, and we didn't benefit. That lie, that untruth, that illusion, that distortion of what's happening has created in some cases, though apparently not in the case of this gentleman, for which we're grateful, but in some cases, that has created the greatest pain that you could possibly imagine. Because they have it set up that they've done these things not for themselves, but for another. Even those to whom it has not caused pain have another racket going. That racket that some of them have going is they get to feel good about themselves. Because after all, they did all this stuff for someone else. See, none of it was for themselves. I have something to tell you. It is impossible to do something that is not self-serving. That is rule of life number three. It is impossible to do something that is not self-serving. If you aren't clear about that, you're liable to think that you're doing something that's not self-serving, and if you're not clear, you're liable to also think that therefore someone owes you something. If not that person, life in general. After all, I've been a nice guy and done all these non-self-serving things. How can life treat me this way? Nice guys finish last and all the rest of that stuff. So I would like to disabuse you of the notion that it's possible to do a thing that's not self-serving. Everything you do serves you, or you would not do it. Everything. Every choice you make serves you, or you would not make it, I promise you. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way it is, because that's the way, if you'll forgive this use of word, it's supposed to be. You should be self-serving. All that we need to do to raise the level of our collective experience as a united humanity is to raise the level of what we define as serving the self. Change our idea about what serves us. But as we raise the level of our definition regarding what in fact serves us, we can continue to serve ourselves, to be self-serving, and still have a human race of which we can be proud. Yet it's important to recognize, how am I served by being or doing this? It's very important to recognize that. Failure to recognize that will lead you down the corridor of resentment faster than you could possibly imagine. Therefore, if now you are sitting in resentment, even today, of any person, place, or thing, of any organization, company, country, nation, person, if you are sitting in anger and resentment right now, it is because you have not been clear with yourself about why you have been, done, or have had a thing. Why you be, do, or have anything. Any choice you make. But let's get clear before this program is complete. Nobody does anything they don't want to do.